Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
It is a holiday Tuesday, holiday week, it feels like, live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. We are on Fox Sports Radio, we are on iHeartRadio, and we are right here on FS1, 1 hour from now. The Herd hierarchy, top 10 teams in the NFL. Kansas City keeps falling. We'll talk about that in 1 hour. Urban Meyer rumors to the NFL. Joy Taylor's joining me. Joy, how are you today?
I'm great. That was something last night.
Wow, it was.
A little hard on the eyes.
In Foxborough against Belichick. Start my show today. We know certain things are really important in life. Like, if you've ever had car trouble, if you've ever had unreliable transportation. And we all know it's important to have like a reliable car, but man, you can't even quantify how valuable reliable transportation is. And we all know it's valuable, but it's still underrated. It ruins your life. I had a buddy once that got a cavity. He's like, at least if I broke my arm, I could walk around. He goes, I can't think. I can't sleep. You get a cavity, it ruins your life. It's like last night, the Patriots lost at home against the best coach in football history, 38-9. What would Buffalo have won by against Doug Marone, Mike Mularkey, 51-3? That was against Belichick at home in a standalone game, and it wasn't even competitive. The gap in talent, speed, playmakers. Bill Belichick, if that's not a wake-up call that he needs to give more personnel power to somebody else outside the organization, I don't know what is. They haven't drafted a skill player that made a Pro Bowl in a decade. I think it was Gronk was the last one they drafted, and he retired once. The numbers are staggering. 11 first downs, 200 total yards. Buffalo had almost 500. Buffalo had the ball for 40 minutes. New England, 20. Cam passed for 34 yards. And I talk about transportation being underrated, even though you know it's valuable. Let's just admit it this morning. Tom Brady was undervalued. No, I said it. Despite all the credit, despite us knowing how great he was, despite calling him the GOAT, he was undervalued. I'm going to ask you a question. Try to figure out the answer. New England had a top 10 scoring offense last year. How? Their offensive line is better this year. New England was 12-4 last year. Their only losses were to three division winners and a really red-hot Miami team at the end. How? They don't have any players. I mean, this whole thing was always, remember, we always argued, it's the system. You'd see these newspaper articles. You'd see these articles in magazines, clearly New England coaches planting them. It's about the system. I want to talk for a second about the system, because the system got a lot of press. I've never met the system. The system is Josh McDaniels, because Belichick lets Josh run the offense. So Josh McDaniels created a system that's very sophisticated. He actually took it to Denver. And so this morning I went and looked up how the system did in Denver. Oh, it was 11-17, fired after 2 years. And in scoring in the NFL, it was 20th and 19th. Okay. There are exceptions in life. The system then moved to St. Louis. McDaniels got fired, went to the Rams. Let's see how the system did in scoring. Oh, it was 32nd in the NFL in scoring, dead last. Okay. All right. We'll give him a quarterback. All right, let's give him Cam Newton in the system. He's a former MVP. Oh, they're 28th in scoring. Brady, in 20 years in the system, was never lower and almost always above 7th. They had a top 10 offense last year with that. This garbage. How? Again, the offensive line is better this year than it was last. And you see the duress sometimes. Cam, who's more mobile than Tom, is under. This system is a bunch of nonsense. Tom Brady is the system. He's the system. Because Tom Brady went down. Everybody talks about Bruce Arians. Oh, first year with Bruce Arians. Everybody struggles. Yeah, Tom's not. He's going to complete 68% of his throws. His passer rating is going to be over 100. He's going to have like 37 touchdowns and 11 picks. Come on. You tell me. Maybe Bill Belichick? He relies on a system because he's won now 46% of his games without Tom Brady. These numbers are staggering. And Cam Newton, again, former MVP. We never said Cam Newton was Tom Brady. Here are the numbers, Tom Brady to Cam Newton. And we went in with realistic expectations for Cam Newton. He didn't get a preseason. He was kind of an odd fit with Belichick, we thought, and Josh McDaniels. Look at the numbers. Brady, 24 touchdowns, 8 picks. Cam, 5 touchdowns, 10 picks. I mean, I'm sorry, but there are certain things in life we know are valuable, and they're still not given enough credit. Tom Brady now qualifies. That and a reliable car. So Dwayne Haskins is no longer a member of the Washington football team. Talented kid at Ohio State. I said, I thought he looked like a number one pick. Big, strong football factory, won big games, not super athletic, but can move a little bit. But, you know, he looked like a number one pick at quarterback. Big, strong, stands in the pocket, can take a hit, you can bang off him, he's strong. I asked Urban Meyer one time, I said, is he ready to start in the NFL? And it was a little bit of a warning flag. He's like, nah, not yet. That tells me it's probably some maturity issues. But every 3 or 4 years, there is a college quarterback that comes out. Now, Haskins didn't qualify as this, but we do know now that Haskins simply wasn't mature enough. He just wasn't ready to run a $5 billion franchise. But about every 3 or 4 years on this show, a college quarterback comes out. He's always talented. Baker Mayfield, Jameis Winston, Johnny Manziel. I was a little tough on Cam, not as much as Baker or Johnny or Jameis. And I question their maturity. And without exception, the media freaks out and the fan bases freak out and everybody freaks out. And do you know why I question maturity? Two words, Dwayne Haskins. Washington just wasted 2 years babysitting a quarterback. I think we should have a new term for quarterbacks. I had Jimmy Johnson on a couple days ago, and he talked about the two things that mattered to him. Number one was decision-making. Number two was accuracy. Let's just be honest about this singular position. I'm not saying it matters in baseball, hockey, soccer, basketball. I'm not saying it matters at any position except quarterback. But this is the one position in American sports, perhaps international sports, where two words are really important. Are you uniquely mature? Because I don't think Dwayne Haskins is any less mature than the average 22-year-old. I don't. I think he's the average 22-year-old. But from now on, let's just all acknowledge that this doesn't matter in hockey, baseball, basketball. I don't even think it really matters in football. But when you draft a quarterback, he's going to have to be almost square, like Andrew Luck and Tom Brady and Russell Wilson. Uniquely mature for a 22-year-old. He's going to have to deal with the press. The linebacker won't. He's going to have to deal with the owners and some sponsors. The safety won't. He's going to have to memorize a playbook, not only for himself, but his teammates. The defensive tackle won't. Uniquely mature. I'm not blaming the player all the time. I mean, let's be honest. Sometimes parents aren't uniquely mature and you don't find your way until you're 32 years old. But owners can't wait for that. And the problem being is when you get a Baker or you get a Johnny Manziel or you get a Dwayne Haskins, who they're just not perfect maturity-wise for the position, they often go to the worst teams. And the worst teams are the most chaotic, with the craziest owners, with the most impatient GMs. It's a Cleveland, it's a Washington, it's a Detroit, it's a Jacksonville, and that just compounds it. But everybody always freaks out. Let's just have a new rule on this show. For one position in American sports, baseball don't care, basketball, hockey, soccer, football don't care, for quarterback, are you uniquely mature to get the keys to a $5 billion franchise? And if you're not, you're going to be criticized. And that's okay, because Johnny's out of the league. Dwayne may be out of the league. Jameis, who's talented and productive, is now a backup. I'm not sure if Cam gets another shot, and he's been great this year. But the Dwayne Haskins story is why we ask the questions. It's why we bang on it. Washington spent the last 2 years in a competitive division just babysitting. Can't have it. Not at that position. Anything else? Guard? Mike linebacker? Safety? Punter? I could deal with it. Can't at quarterback. I was watching Josh Allen last night. And if I was going to vote for the MVP this morning, it would be Aaron Rodgers 1, Josh Allen 2, and Mahomes 3. I'll get into that later. But there is a precedent for Josh Allen being absolutely horrible your first year in the NFL, and a year and a half later, maybe being the next great quarterback or in a short list of the next great quarterback. And it's interesting who the precedent is. We've seen it before, and we hear from this person all the time.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So generally, first impressions with quarterbacks in the NFL are somewhat accurate. You can see great really quickly. Russell Wilson, Brett Favre, John Elway, Peyton Manning. You can see it. Patrick Mahomes, you can see it. You're like, wow. Josh Allen was different. He was awful his first year. 52% completion percentage, 10 touchdowns, 12 picks, passer rating in the 60s. And he was bad his last year at college, and then he goes to the NFL, he's bad. But there is a reason why the eye test matters. There is a reason in recruiting you'll find a smaller player who's super productive, but general managers like the size and the arm and the mobility, they like those things. They like big. They like the eye test. They like the feel. Josh Allen, awful as a rookie 2 years later, outside of Aaron Rodgers, he's my number two choice for MVP. He's got more touchdown passes this year than he did in his first 2 years combined. And I think, and generally it doesn't work that way. You see a lot of special early. Justin Herbert, a lot of special, not winning a bunch of games yet, but a lot of special. Peyton Manning, Elway, Russell Wilson, Favre, Rodgers. I think his precedent is Troy Aikman. And Troy Aikman was 0-11 his rookie year. He had 9 touchdowns, 18 picks, a passer rating in the mid-50s, and completed barely 52% of his throws. Troy was bad. And Josh Allen was bad. But they had something in common. And this is why the look, the size, the arm, some of this stuff's not quantifiable. It's just, it looks like it should work. Troy Aikman looked like he should work. Have you ever been around Troy Aikman in a t-shirt? A couple years ago, I bumped into him. He was out to dinner, and Troy's just big. He got big hands. He's got big chest. Troy's just big. Troy looks like an NFL quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. If you drew a picture of him, you're like, yeah, that what's that guy do for a living? He's a quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. He looks like a quarterback. Josh Allen, big, strong kid. Dad's big. Josh Allen's big. He looks like a quarterback. They both had one thing in common. They were awful their rookie year. But the reason GMs and people fall in love with sort of the size and the arm is if you can just get three things right. And Josh Allen and Troy Aikman, three things got right. You got him a great young coach, Sean McDermott, Jimmy Johnson. So you got him a good coach. You got him a sharp young coordinator, Norv Turner, Brian Daboll. And you got both. They both popped. When you get them a developing or a star go-to wide receiver, every Sunday, they got to take it off the top guy, Stephon Diggs and Michael Irvin. And You get the coach right. You get the day-to-day coordinator right. And then you get him a guy that Troy and Josh are driving to the arena, and they know my guy is better than anybody they got covering my guy. And I'm going to throw it to him about 9 times. I'm going to hit him about 7, and he's going to break 1 or 2. And when I look at Josh, I see a lot of Aikman where it's usually not that bad for the all-time talents as rookies. You see a lot of stuff that's very encouraging. And with both, it was really kind of a mess. You get the coach, you get the coordinator, you get the go-to wide receiver. And 2 years later, Aikman was a Pro Bowler. 3 years later, he was winning Super Bowls and was America's quarterback. And this kid is, it's crazy. I mean, he is out of this world good. Arm, size, look, cannon, risk taker, a little cocky. Like Mahomes, he plays with a little, I don't like swagger, just a little cocky. I'm going to make the throw and kind of turn my head a little bit, just let you know, wasn't that hard, I could do it again.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
All right, it's The Herd Hierarchy. It's my top 10 teams in the NFL. Let's not waste any time. Here we go.
Herd Hierarchy.
Time is now. Let's go.
The top 10 NFL teams according to Colin. Number 10.
Listen, I'm still going to put the Cleveland Browns into it. The Jets game, they were missing too many players. Here's what worries me. Not that they've lost 2 of 3. What worries me is they're the only team with a winning record in the NFL and a negative point differential, and that's something Vegas looks at. That is not a Super Bowl winning team. They're a playoff team, and I do think they'll beat Pittsburgh Sunday and make it in. They have the best, highest graded offensive line in the NFL. I've told you before, they remind me of the Dallas Cowboys. Dak's rookie year. Great running game, great O-line, talented but limited quarterback, and they get there, win or lose, probably lose their first playoff game, Cleveland at 10.
Number 9.
I don't even know what to make of the Chicago Bears. I think it's the nuttiest turnaround I've ever seen. They were awful. They lost 6 straight games and everybody was getting fired. Now they've scored 30-plus points in 4 straight games. Chicago hasn't done that since the 60s. Matt Nagy is hot. Trubisky, for all his issues, is 25-12 during the Matt Nagy era. They're on a 3-game winning streak. If they can beat the Packers, they're in. I do not think they'll beat the Green Bay Packers, but I like their defensive personnel. Trubisky does run around a lot. They got a little bit of a Baltimore feel to them, that they're a little contrarian to the league. They throw good enough if the running game is moving. And frankly, the coaching staff, Matt Nagy, deserves a ton of credit because I thought this team was dead. There was a shovel, and I was about 2 scoops from buried officially. Now they're at 9.
Number 8.
Miami Dolphins. I do worry, not psychologically, that Tua was benched, but he's struggling. He's not throwing for a lot of yards. It's a lot of safe stuff, underneath stuff. You know, doesn't move the chains. A lot of 3 and outs. They have won 4 of their last 5. The Chiefs is their only loss. Their defense is number 1 in the NFL scoring defense. You know what they feel like? They feel like a playoff team, but they can't win a playoff game. It's very much a Cleveland feel, but I like their coach better than Cleveland's. Not that I don't like Kevin Stefanski, but I think Brian Flores is the next superstar coach in this league, Miami at 8.
Number 7.
Baltimore Ravens. I probably have them low. Listen, the running game is rolling. They're good on 3rd down. Lamar's absolutely on fire. If they beat the Bengals, they're in. In the last 4 games, points, rushing, 3rd down, and passer rating, Lamar's top 3. I have the same questions you do. What can they do in the postseason? How will they be trailing against an elite playoff team? I don't know the answers. That's why I put them at 7. But I would not have any interest playing Baltimore if I'm in the AFC.
Number 6.
Tampa Bay. I put them at 6 because of Tom Brady. He's been in so many playoff games and so many close games that you give him the edge over Baltimore. Last 3 games, I know it's against junk defenses, but he's absolutely on fire. Here's what worries me, though. This is why I do not think they're a Super Bowl winning team. They're 9-0 against teams that are 500 or worse. They're 1-5 against winning teams. There's a Mike Tyson quality. They beat up on average fighters. But you put them in a Lennox Lewis or an Evander Holyfield, and somebody punches back, and they just don't have a second or a third gear. I will say, Brady and Mike Evans are really aligned right now. Brady is using Gronk more. Ronald Jones, who's explosive, will come back. So I think they're clearly capable of winning a playoff game or two.
Number 5.
Seattle Seahawks. I worry about their offensive line. Can you win a Super Bowl with that offensive line? But since Jamal Adams got healthy and Carlos Dunlap came over, they have solved their pass rush issue, which has simultaneously helped their okay corners. They need to draft a cornerback, and everybody in the building knows it. I got a Super Bowl coach. I got a winning quarterback. I mean, that Rams game is exactly what the Seahawks do. Their offense looks like junk for 3.5 hours. And then Russell end of the half, Russell end of the game, you look up and you're like, okay, you won another division. So their scoring defense since week 10 has held each of the last five opponents under 20 points, and that matters.
Number four.
The Saints. I've got a concern, though. Since coming back from the rib injuries, I speak from experience. I have a rib injury. He's got an 83 passer rating, and Drew Brees is completing 56% of his throws. It worries me. I'd love for him to take a week or two off. And they've allowed 30-plus points in back-to-back games because they're not moving the chains, because they're giving the ball back. I do think, when healthy, this is the best overall roster in the NFL. I do think they're a tough matchup for Green Bay, but right now, because Drew isn't quite right, I put him at four.
Number three.
Kansas City. Yes, they've won 7 straight games, all by 6 points. That's not a top team in the NFL. They've got 7 giveaways in the last 3 games. They have the worst red zone defense in the NFL, and Patrick Mahomes struggled in December. 8 touchdowns, 5 turnovers, and a passer rating in the high 80s. Again, as Trent Dilfer said, their floor is really high. They play poorly and win. But at some point, that's in the regular season. You're going to face the best coaches and the best coordinators and the best teams and the best momentum in the next 2 weeks, and they're just not clicking.
Number two.
Green Bay. My only concern is they had the easiest schedule in the NFL. A lot of this feels like fluff, but their scoring offense is profound. Devontae Adams and Aaron Jones, their 2 key weapons, both healthy. The offensive line is good enough. They've won 7 of their last 8 games. Aaron looks comfortable. Matt LaFleur, I think, is improved. I think they're a better second half offense than they were last year, where I thought they were very good on script, very average post-halftime. They feel like the second best team, and they are humming and hitting on all cylinders. Kansas City's not. That's why they're above them.
Number one.
Buffalo, 3rd week in a row. They're a Hail Mary from 9 straight wins, 24-plus points in 8 games. Their defense now is playing well, and that's their question. They've held 4 of their last 5 opponents under 20. Stephon Diggs is essentially uncoverable. He's the hottest receiver in the league, he and Devontae Adams. So they give me everything. They give me clever coaching, playmakers, star quarterback, weaponry on the outside, playing great situational defense. I think Buffalo's the best team in the league, Green Bay 2nd, Kansas City 3rd, and the best roster, in my opinion, New Orleans at 4. Seattle 5, and Jamal Adams will be joining us next hour. We wanted Jamal on today. We asked, and he said, okay, I'll come on the show. That's all we have to do, folks. We're like the handsome guy. We just ask people out, and they say, yeah, all the time. It's just an amazing thing.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
First game I went to as a kid, professional sporting event, was a Seahawk game against John Elway, and I think the Seahawks beat him. And Jamal Adams is now joining us. He's part of the Seahawks. 4th year, 3 Pro Bowls. So let's start with this. How you doing, bud? Good to see you again.
God is good, man. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. And it's interesting. Joey and I talk about this all the time. I can't imagine having a job where I could work at a place I love and get traded to a place I didn't love. The opposite happened to you. You were in a losing culture. And one day you get a phone call and they say, hey, we're going to ship you to Seattle where they win Super Bowls and they're really good. I mean, when you first arrived in Seattle, like, did it feel different? Just on the feeling that it was a winning team and a winning culture and the whole building, did it feel different to you?
Yeah, it did, man. You know, from the day I walked in, you know, the first thing Pete and Mr. Snyder told me was to be myself, you know, come here and be myself and come win ball games. That's what it's about, you know. So this organization is one of one. It's very unique, and I'm just fortunate enough to be here, man.
Well, you know, Pete's very different. Even though he's a 68, 69-year-old guy, he's got a lot of enthusiasm. So tell me, how is Pete different than other coaches you've had?
He cares about his players on and off the field. You know what I mean? And I think that's what makes it special. You know, you go to war for a coach like that. You know, you just want to play for him. You want to give it. You know, obviously he's not a me guy. He doesn't want all the praise, but you want to play for a coach like that. You'll go extra hard for him. He's full of energy, very unique. You know, he's himself at all times. He doesn't care what anybody thinks about him. And I got his back forever, man. That's my guy.
So you're different. You have most sacks by a defensive back in a single season. And at times, I don't like you're a safety, but not really. You remind me a little bit of Honey Badger in that you're just a real instinctive football player that blows stuff up and makes stuff happen. In the Seattle defense, does Pete consider you a safety, a linebacker? Like, do you have a specific label, or how do you feel you should be or are treated there in terms of position?
Well, I classify myself as a playmaker. You know what I mean? I can play anything you need me to do. Any position really. And you know, I don't really classify myself just as a safety. You know, I classify myself as a defensive weapon. You know what I mean? And so I'm just going to continue to play my ball, continue to do what they ask me to do, continue to learn, and that's all I can do.
So we thought on this show, I've been a fan of Carlos Dunlap forever. Smart guy. He got into a bad situation. He got into a situation like you. He was in an organization that wasn't winning games. And then Seattle goes and gets him, and now both of you go from losers to winners. Have you and Carlos talked about the difference? Because he had a similar situation to you, Jamal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We talk about it all the time, and we're so fortunate. We always, you know, tell the guys over here that, hey, man, if you're a rookie or you've been here for, you know, your whole career, you're really spoiled, right? And they spoil the guys in the right way over here. They treat us how we're supposed to be treated, and but at the same time, they let us have fun. They let us be ourselves, and you know, just be unique in our own ways. And then, you know, come together as a team, and you know, chase championships. That's what it's about.
So far for the Seahawks, because I thought the Rams have. You're in a division now where it's crazy. You got Russell Wilson running around and Kyler Murray running around. A lot of offensive coaches, and you kind of, is there a team in the playoffs, an offense that, what does worry you about Seattle going forward? Are there things that you think you have to get better at right now? Cause we're running out of regular season here. What does Seattle have to get better at?
We're hitting our stride at the right time. You know, I like us over anybody. That's just the confidence that I have. That's the confidence that we have as a group. And we know what type of, you know, guys we go to war with every day. We know what type of staff that's preparing us each and every day and every week. So we're going to be ready. You know, whoever the matchup is, when the time comes, we'll be ready for it. But at the end of the day, we just want to, you know, continue to stay focused on the mission. We have one more game left, and that's versus the 49ers. So the next game is important because it's the next one.
Russell Wilson's obviously a tremendous transformational player. Now you practice against Russell Wilson every day. Is it better than you thought? I mean, give me a thought about practicing with Russell, what it's like every day.
Yeah. I mean, the ultimate pro, you know, what you see is what you get. You know, he's all about his business. He comes to work each and every day. You know what type of guy you're going to get. You know what type of teammate, what type of leader you're going to get on and off the field. And he's the ultimate competitor. He wants to win, and I respect him so much. That's my guy. I always call him three. And you know, we're starting to build a great relationship. And you know, like I said, man, I just have so much respect for what he does on and off the field. He's always at work early, and he's always leaving late or whatever the case may be. He's always putting in work, man. True pro.
So DK Metcalf it doesn't even look like the rest of us, right? Like, he's just a different body type. Do you, when you face him every day at practice, I mean, do you as a guy that's been around this league a while now, almost a half decade, do you talk to him? Do you tutor him? Is he accepting of it? What do you do with some of the young Seattle offensive players at practice?
Yeah, I just tell them to keep going, you know what I mean, and keep elevating. You know, I'm still young in the game myself, right? I'm only 25, you know, year four. So, you know, I'm still young and I'm still, you know, going to continue to learn. But I always tell those guys to, you know, never stop learning and continue to learn, be willing to learn and, you know, always stay coachable because, you know, there's so much knowledge out there and you don't know it all yet. You know, no one knows it all yet. And, you know, you just want to keep elevating your game. So that's all that matters.
Now, I'm from Seattle, so I can handle the rain. I grew up, my high school football games were all in the rain, Jamal. You know, you were down in Louisiana. It can be warm. And how are you acclimating to Seattle's slightly gloomy winter weather?
Yeah, it's different, man. I will say it's different, but I enjoy it. You know what I mean? It's very relaxing when you want to relax. And, you know, I don't go out, obviously, you know, with COVID. You know, I'm in the house. This is probably a rare, you know, chance that I take. And I go, you know, get my pedicure, you know, every Tuesday. But other than that, man, I'm in the building. I'm leaving the building. I'm going home. You know what I mean? So I'm just focused on the mission. And, you know, God is good, man.
Manny Petty today. So you got your pedicure just moments ago?
Absolutely, man. Got to keep it right.
Well, Joy's shaking her head. She's like, yeah, totally.
You have to take care of your feet.
Got to take. And listen, bad feet, ugly feet are a problem for everybody.
Yeah. Pretty boy off the field. Pretty boy off the field.
Jamal, congratulations. Good to have you in a winning culture. And the defense, I just saw a stat here today. Number 2 pass defense since week 12. And 31 sacks, most in the NFL since Carlos Dunlap and Jamal Adams returned in week 9. So you are absolutely humming, and you're healthy, and your running backs are healthy. Are you healthy, by the way? Do you feel good right now?
I'm good enough, and that's all that matters. I'm good enough.
That's the NFL. Good talking to you, bud.
Absolutely, buddy. Thank you, man.
You bet. Jamal Adams, he's a Pete Carroll player. So he's sometimes you're like, oh, he's a little overly aggressive. When you go back to Pete Carroll at Seattle, they had a few penalties. Like Pete would let guys play. Pete's always been, and he actually went, Adam Gase struggles with stars. Pete very much embraces stars. That's why one succeeds and one doesn't.
I don't get that in professional sports, struggling with stars. Okay, it's not for you. That's right. Where the stars are. You can't deal with stars. Anytime a coach is like, oh, to deal with stars, like, okay.
You're a college coach.
You're a college coach, and you're probably not going to be great. This is where the stars are.
But Pete, like he said, like Pete lets you play. Like Pete's practices are big energy. You know, it's Pete is so unique in the NFL. And I've had GMs say, I don't understand Seattle's draft. I don't understand. They do things just everything a little different than everybody else. They draft a little differently. They're the only team in the NFL that can struggle with their first round picks, but they're great with their fourth round picks. They've had some misses in their first round picks. And, like, they'll make picks when they did Rashad Penny a couple years ago. I had two GMs were like, I don't even understand that pick. That's not even what they need.
I think what they've done in the middle of the season has been impressive.
Unbelievable.
Going from having no pass rush.
They're like Tennessee. They had no pass rush.
Yeah, but Tennessee didn't do anything about it.
Nothing. Tennessee's a team that they had a cornerback issue. They didn't sign Logan, who I love on this show. Like, sign him. And they didn't have a pass rush, and they didn't do anything. Seattle had both those issues. They didn't love their corners. And they didn't have a pass rush. But by Dunlap and Jamal Adams coming in, made their corners better. So Seattle's issue now is actually switched. It's more of an interior offensive line issue. They don't get a ton of push. It's better than Pittsburgh, but they're not getting a push. And it does feel like sometimes, if Chris Carson's not healthy, you feel like you don't have much of a running game. So Seattle needs to draft a corner and an interior offensive lineman. And that kind of solves their two little dilemmas. And at this point, they're little dilemmas. That's about all they are. The supplement I take every day is M-Drive. Powerful ingredients backed by science. Helps you get energized, stronger, leaner. Go to mdriveformen.com today. Refine your prime with M-Drive. You know, I've talked a lot about how I live in Los Angeles now. And all the LA teams are good. All of them. It just doesn't make any sense. We have the best players. We have the best teams. Rams now are a little sideways, but they'll make the playoffs because they'll lose to Arizona, but the
Chicago
Bears will lose to Green Bay.
Yeah.
But when I was a kid growing up in Seattle, our team stunk. So it was like, I got a championship with the Sonics in the 70s. The Huskies were good in the early 90s. The Seahawks were entertaining, but like now in Seattle, it's like the Seahawks are just good every year. And if Russell Wilson stays for 10 more years, they're going to probably be in the playoffs, 8 of those 10. Seattle deserves it, I'll tell you that. See you tomorrow, The Herd.